crossroads of empires, battleground of the ages, city of peace and of war. This is Jerusalem, where archaeology uncovers the empires of yesterday, where prophecy decodes the headlines of today. This is where history and prophecy come alive. This is Watch Jerusalem.
Hello and welcome back to Watch Jerusalem. I'm your host, Brent Nachtigal. We're coming to you today from Jerusalem, Israel, as per usual. Thank you very much for listening in today. Just like to apologize at the outset here for my voice, suffering from a bit of congestion. And at times like this, it's good that you are not here live with me in the studio. On today's program, I want to discuss with you some of the preparations that we're making, the final preparations we're making for the archaeological exhibit entitled Seals of Isaiah and King Hezekiah Discovered. This, of course, is going to be opening 2 weeks from today. It'll be opening in Edmond, Oklahoma, and it's going to feature the two seal impressions of King Hezekiah of Judah, as well as the one likely belonging to Isaiah the prophet. And this is the first time that they're going to be shown together. It's the world premiere. It's really exciting to be preparing for this. And I do want to just go through some of these details to excite you about this upcoming exhibit. Of course, the opening ceremony is going to be streamed on watchjerusalem.co.il. We'll also have an exhibit tab there that will take you through all the text that exists in the exhibit and a lot of the video features as well. I think there's 3 or 4 or 5 documentaries that are being made, little 5-minute videos, mini videos, little fact sheets basically in video form that go through these discoveries from a scientific standpoint to see how they stack up against the Bible and secular history. Something that you'll find very interesting. And so if you can't get to Oklahoma, we're doing our very best to make sure that you're still able to access this information. As far as the artifacts themselves, they fly out from Israel. It's 2 o'clock this afternoon here in Jerusalem time, and they fly out at 4:30. So 2.5 hours, we're going to have 2 massive crates full of artifacts, not just these 2 little bullae, but artifacts that are going to leave Ben-Gurion Airport and make their way to Frankfurt, where they will be overnight, and they're going to have an armed guard that will be watching over them overnight before they get on another plane. Of course, there's a courier from the Antiquities Authority traveling with these artifacts. And then on that plane from Frankfurt, they'll fly direct to Dallas. And there, one of our workmen is going to pick them up in a truck, as well as the courier, and head north the 3.5 hours to Armstrong Auditorium, where they will be offloaded and then over the next couple of days set up. So definitely you could be thinking about that over these next couple of days. There's a lot of work that still needs to be done, a lot of the final touches on this exhibit. But it's exciting that these crates, these of 40 artifacts, they're not just, as I said, not just the bullae. We have a lot of artifacts. All of them, in fact, are from the very time period of King Hezekiah. And we really do paint this picture of the story of Hezekiah and his relationship with the prophet Isaiah, as well as the impending siege that Jerusalem is going to come upon by King Sennacherib of Assyria. As we've talked about on this program, this is a bit of history that is captured in secular records so well, and you can put them together as we have done, or as we have attempted to in this exhibit, with the Bible there telling the story and these other artifacts telling the story as well, and seeing how closely that they align. If you haven't seen it yet, we did publish this week a video trailer. This is going to be featured both in the exhibit as the very first video that people see when they come in, and also it'll be featured at the beginning of the Jerusalem reception. For those of you that are in Jerusalem or Israel, I know there are a lot of you that, or there are many of you that, which not as many as I'd like, but there are many of you that do listen to this program, and you can come and attend this Jerusalem reception that is going to be basically the opening event that is going to stream back from Armstrong Auditorium with speakers. And then we're going to have Dr. Eilat Mazar here in the King David Hotel in Jerusalem. She'll be speaking at 7 p.m. and that'll be beamed back to Armstrong Auditorium for the festivities there. Anyway, if you would like to attend that... If you would like to attend the Jerusalem reception, you can do so by just writing to letters@watchjerusalem.co.il, express your interest, let me know how many people are going to be attending. It is a free event. We don't want the whole world coming. Well, it'd be great if the whole world came, really. This message, and that's why it's on the website, can get to the whole world. But as far as people that are going to come to this event, we expect it to be somewhere around 150 to 200 people. And so if you would like to come to that, please email the program. I've already had a couple of people from Israel, not just in Jerusalem, that would like to come and that are coming. Watch Jerusalem listeners, so that's great. So if you would like to do that, please go ahead and email me. Today, actually, we received our 5,000th like on Facebook. That is the Watch Jerusalem page on Facebook. That includes about 900 people here in Jerusalem. And so if you're one of those 900, please go ahead and try and come to this event. Well, as these artifacts make their way up across the world and then up from Dallas to Oklahoma, they'll be put into their display cases. And as I said, they all are from King Hezekiah's time. A lot of them come from Lachish, the city that was the second largest city in ancient Judah at the time, the late 8th century BCE. And that city was absolutely demolished destroyed by Sennacherib. And we have a lot of artifacts that were found in the destruction layer of that Assyrian incursion, or the Assyrian destruction of that city. And they will be featured as well in Armstrong Auditorium. Really, if you talk to any biblical archaeologist, it is this period that really comes alive as far as archaeological artifacts that have been discovered. We went to the Israel Antiquities storeroom, I guess a couple of months it was ago, to pick out some other artifacts that they had there to kind of furnish this story and beef it up a little bit to show the history. And as we were talking to one of the curators there, she mentioned just how much material there is from this period, because it's a destruction. And so as this city was destroyed, a lot of the time when it's built up again, the next constructor does not get rid of all the previous layer. He kind of flattens it out a little bit, and it's buried under there as a nice layer to come across for an archaeologist thousands of years later. And so they have so much from this destruction layer at Lachish. And then there are also a lot of other destruction layers from Sennacherib's time. We know that there were, he says, at least Sennacherib says, and he claims that he conquered 46 of Judah's fenced cities. He couldn't conquer number 47, but 46 of them are conquered. And so we do have a lot. I believe it's probably 15. I'm just throwing that number out there. 15 other cities that we have excavated, that have been excavated, that attest to this same destruction, the same time as Lachish and the same time that Jerusalem was going to be taken. And so we do have a lot of artifacts from that time. We have these, a lot of arrowheads as well. I forget the number. It's under a dozen, but a nice handful of arrowheads, Assyrian arrowheads, that are found in the destruction layer of Lachish as well. And we're going to great lengths to try and show them to you. Of course, when you have metal objects like this that are 2,500 years old plus, they really want to make sure that they're preserved. And so when we saw these in the storerooms in Beit Shemesh a couple of months ago, they were in a really environmentally controlled room. The humidity has to stay very constant, around 20%. And so if you loan these artifacts, you have to ensure that you can ensure that the humidity stays down and so that they don't further corrode. And so we are doing that. And so you'll be able to see them as well. The curator also, Brad McDonald, he is also the managing editor of Watch Jerusalem. He is going to be there for the preparation. He flies out from England today, and he is flying over to Edmond, Oklahoma, and he'll be there as well. And so it's work full steam ahead here on this great project to show off and exhibit and show to the world these seal impressions that bring back to life King Hezekiah, Isaiah the prophet, their relationship, and what that means for today as well. That's not going to be lost on people. Just the hope that these two seal impressions entail when you look at this story of Sennacherib attempting the king of Assyria, the king of the world, attempting to take Jerusalem, and his failure there, and the reason for his failure, that's a hope-filled message. Because in his failure, you see a success of Hezekiah and Isaiah and how they went about their business, beseeching God for help, recognizing the fact that the only Savior that could help them was God in this case. As he had already taken 46 other cities, he had already taken the well-defended city of Lachish, and coming down to Jerusalem, he was going to take Jerusalem, and yet that didn't happen. Why didn't it happen? We do bring a lot of attention to that. But first, I want to talk about how we got to this point. How did we get to the point that we have two seal impressions that belong to an ancient king, Hezekiah, of the Bible and the prophet Isaiah, and to the point that we get to exhibit them in Armstrong Auditorium today, and also everyone in the world can see those on Watch Jerusalem? How did we get here? Well, I've talked about this a little bit before in a previous program of just the location in which these two bulle were found, because that is so exciting in itself. There are so many occasions in the past 50 years where these, or more than that, 60 years, where these bulle, or the patch of earth that they were found in, could have been taken, excavated, and if they weren't excavated at the precise time that they were back in 2009, we wouldn't have them today. And I'll let you know what I mean. And really, it does look like God has preserved the discovery of Hezekiah and Isaiah, these two seal impressions, for our time today, for our time. And if that sounds a bit out of the question or a bit absurd, just listen to these coincidences in which these bulle could have disappeared. The area in which these bulle would later be discovered is on the Ophel. It's about 150 meters from the southern wall of the Temple Mount before you get to the Ophel Road. And this was first excavated. Actually, it was first excavated by way back 150 years ago with some tunnels that went right by this area. But when it was fully excavated, well, when it was excavated close down to bedrock, it was excavated in 1967 by Dame Kathleen Kenyon. She excavated all the way down here to bedrock in this area, but left a later Byzantine wall at the very edge of her area. And so this Byzantine wall that's 1,500 years old, she decided, I'm just going to excavate to bedrock outside this larger wall, but I'm going to leave that Byzantine period wall. Well, that was 67. Then in 1986, Dr. Elot Mazar and Benjamin Mazar, they had a really small excavation season in March and April of 1986. This was just for about 4 weeks. And in that excavation, they dismantled one side of this Byzantine wall that was discovered by Kenyon all the way down to bedrock. And they excavated the earth under it, and they didn't find any bulle. Then Dr. Mazar, she returns back to this same area. So you've got two excavators that have excavated this same place and decided, oh, let's just leave that wall. Normally you get rid of those walls so you can find the earlier stuff underneath. But in Kenyon's case, she left it. In Benjamin and Mazar and Elot's case, they left it, or left part of it. Then Elot Mazar comes back in 2009, and the end of 2009, December, November, and into January. And there's this tiny phase where I got to be a part of this excavation, this very area, along with another Herbert W. Armstrong College student, Harley Breath. And Dr. Mazar made the decision then it was time to remove the other side of this Byzantine city wall. And really, it was interesting that in this area, as she removed the other side of this wall, it was in this earth that was under that side of the Byzantine city wall that the Mazars left back in 86 and 87 that the Hezekiah bulle was discovered. It was in that patch of earth that was left behind. Now, during that 86 and 87 phase of excavation, Dr. Mazar also excavated through a layer very close to this, through a layer that included a Herodian cistern, and this was right next to this Byzantine wall. Yet, for some reason, they left a very small patch of earth sitting on bedrock, and this patch of earth was no bigger than 3 feet by 3 feet, by about, I guess, 2 feet in depth. So this is a really tiny patch of earth that they left in 86 and 87. And it was this patch of earth that we came back to excavate in 2009. And Dr. Mazar thought, well, it's only small. It'll take a couple of days to get through it. And so we started excavating, Harley and I, and it ended up taking about a month, I think, just because there were so many individual layers to this. It ended up being a ancient refuse pile where layers were thrown out through different periods. I think we found about 8 different layers there in this about 2-foot section. And yet it was in this patch of earth, in this small patch of earth, where the Isaiah Bulla was found. Again, that could have been excavated in 1986 and 87. Now, if it was excavated in 1986 and 87, these two patches of earth, Hezekiah and Isaiah, their seals, would not have been found because nobody wet sifted back in those days. Nobody wet sifted. That means they would have done some dry sifting where you grab the dirt and you throw it on a sieve and shake it a little bit and look at all the rocks and other things that remain that didn't fall through the sieve. But very rarely do you actually find a bulla like that, because they look like every other patch of dirt. It's only when you come along and you spray it with water that stones are revealed to be stones, and seal impressions or coins or anything else is revealed to be that. And so if those two little patches of earth were excavated, if Benjamin Mazar and Elat decided in 86 that they were going to take both sides of the Byzantine wall, we would have no Hezekiah bulla. If they had decided, well, let's excavate all the way down to bedrock and not leave a little patch of dirt right there on bedrock adjacent to the city wall. Well, if they did that, would there be no Isaiah bulla? And yet those two little patches of earth were left. They were left. Now, I find it amazing that these two areas could have quite easily been excavated by Kathleen Kenyon in the 60s or even the Mazars in the 80s. And they'll left for some reason. And they were left to the time that we could go back there and excavate. And at the time that wet sifting had developed, that was really only just developed in the early 2000s. And so we got to wet sift. And because of that, we have these seals today. And these seals that are going to end up in Armstrong Auditorium in a couple of days. And it's like, just looking back through that history, it's like God was preserving those tiny patches of earth till the technology existed to discover those seal impressions. Isn't that amazing? Now, that's not the only amazing thing. I think it's amazing the fact that we even have the privilege of showcasing these artifacts to the world for the first time. That this is something, really, even though we've been working like crazy for the last couple of months to put this together, this is something we'd wanted to do ever since the Hezekiah bulla was announced back in 2015. And in 2016, it was at a dinner with Dr. Mazar, where Brad McDonald, Mr. McDonald, the managing editor of Watch Jerusalem, and a few others here in Jerusalem, where we asked, Mr. McDonald asked Dr. Mazar about the potential of acquiring the Hezekiah bulla. And she thought that this was a great idea, that we would get it and that we would showcase it. And so she had to call one of the curators of the Israeli Museum, because that's where it was destined to go. And obviously with a bulla or a seal impression of the magnitude of King Hezekiah, this is the first either Israelite king or Judean king, a seal impression belonging to them with their name on it that's ever found in any excavation in Israel throughout the past 150 years of digs. This is it. This is the only one that's ever been found. And so you would understand why the state of Israel would want to hold on to that and exhibit it at the Israel Museum here in Jerusalem. And so Dr. Mazar, she called the curator and asked, "Is it possible? Is it possible that we can send this first to Oklahoma? These people have a history of excavating this area with me." And they did do a previous exhibit a couple of years ago, and that was a success. "Do you think it's possible if they can showcase the Hezekiah bulla?" Well, the curator told her that indeed he had heard about our previous exhibit, and he said he doesn't deny the fact that we would do a good job showcasing the Hezekiah bulla, but it should go to the Israel Museum first. He's had people, this is back in 2016, that had already come to him saying, "Where is it? Why isn't it here yet? Why isn't it in the Israel Museum? It was found 6 months ago. Why isn't it here yet?" And so he said, "Well, it's just got to really come here first." What he suggested was that the day after the Hezekiah bulla is showcased or at least put on display in the Israeli Museum, that we ask for it by from the Antiquities Authority. That's who you have to ask here in Israel. They control all the artifacts that leave the country. And so that's what we said we would do. Okay, we might not get it first, but he said he would put in a good word, and that after the Israeli Museum has had it for a while, maybe 1 year or 1.5 years, that we would absolutely get it. And that was good news for us. We were a little disappointed that we couldn't get it right away, but hey, we'll take the Hezekiah bull at any time that we can. Now, 6 months after that conversation, we followed up with Dr. Mazar and asked, is the Hezekiah bull on display yet in the Israel Museum? Is it there yet? And she follows up and realizes it's not there yet. It's still not being displayed. And so 6 months after that, and this was September 6, 2017, we decided that even though it hasn't been displayed yet, we would put in our official request to the Antiquities Authority. And we obtained that approval to do that from our editor-in-chief of Watch Jerusalem, Gerald Flurry. He said, go for it. And so we did that. We asked, after it goes into the Israeli Museum, can we please have it next? And what happened in that was September 2017. I didn't get much of a response. I don't think I even got any response to that. Nevertheless, this year, earlier this year, February 11th, 2018, even though I hadn't received a response, I decided to ask again. I asked, emailed again with an official letter. It said, could we please get it after the Israel Museum? And I wasn't necessarily hopeful that we would get it right then. The Israeli Museum curator said, no way. No way could that happen. That's what he said 2 years ago. And yet, we emailed, tried again, just let us have it after them. And then a day later, we received word that we could now have it. We could now have it for a short period, a three or four month loan. The Israeli Museum was fine to let it go for a little bit of time. Now, this was just February 12th. This was just a couple of months ago. And if anyone has put on an exhibition before of this magnitude, you know it takes a lot of work to put it together. But this was the first moment that we knew that we could actually get it, that it was possible to receive the Hezekiah bull before the Israel Museum. We'd been petitioning to get it, but we couldn't get it till after them. Now, what's interesting about this, the timing of us being receiving permission of the Hezekiah Bulla, is that just this news that we could do this was just 10 days before the Isaiah Bulla was about to be released to the public. And in a conversation with Dr. Mazar that day on February 12th, she said this was amazing and that she was excited for us to not only have the potential of getting the Hezekiah Bulla now, if only for a few months, we'll take it, but able to receive the Isaiah Bulla as well. And this Isaiah Bulla wasn't even public yet. It had another 10 days to go. Now, why am I going through this history? It's not just to say, well, we couldn't get it, and then we got it. It's because I think there's a hand guiding this. Because what happens back in, when was it, 2016, when we officially asked the very first time, June 5th, 2016, and we asked and said, can we get the Hezekiah Bulla? And the curator says, yes, go for it. Then we would be so excited, we would have put our heart into it, working to prepare an exhibit about King Hezekiah, and it would have been dramatic, for sure. And we would have loved to have done that. But at the time, it was a no. It was a no, 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 no for 2 years. Until the moment, or actually just before the Isaiah Bulla was due to be released. And they say, yes, go for it. And we look at the timing and say, wow, yeah, it would have been good to get Hezekiah 2 years ago, but what about getting it now? What about getting it right as the Isaiah Bulla is part of it? Now we can tell the story not just of Hezekiah, we tell the full story of Isaiah the prophet. And how his relationship with King Hezekiah actually brought about Judah and Jerusalem's protection from Sennacherib. Now, if we got it before then, it would have had a different approach possibly to the exhibit. But now that it had been delayed so long, it was delayed till the Isaiah Bulla came into our knowledge and it was released to the public. And then a couple of days after, we put in our request for the Isaiah Bulla. Dr. Mazar said she wrote a letter to the Antiquities Authority, and she said that she it would be her recommendation that we would be able to present the recently discovered Isaiah Bulla along with the Hezekiah Bulla in their planned exhibit, both seal impressions a part of the same story, and as such, be best showcased together. Indeed, they are, and indeed, they will be, here in just a couple of days. It is obvious to me that God wanted these two seal impressions to be discovered in our time, and that He wants the story of these two historical figures to go together. Right now, just to conclude this program, I want to read from this brand new, well, it's still being put together, exhibit brochure. I think it's going to be about 40 pages. Mr. Brad McDonald and a bunch of others, Mr. Steve Herkus, back from in the United States, has been working a lot with this brochure. And in our effort to make this exhibit available to anyone, you can write to request this brochure, again, just by writing to letters@watchjerusalem.co.il. It doesn't exist yet, but you can be sure it'll exist in a week's time. But you'll be able to get a copy if you want. But our editor-in-chief, Gerald Flory, wrote this in the introduction to it. This is 5 or 6 paragraphs down. He says, "These artifacts have special meaning for the people of Israel and for all humanity. These seals are the fruit of Dr. Mazar's most important work and our wonderful relationship of 50 years. I couldn't think of a better way to celebrate this anniversary than being able to show these sensational artifacts." So, of course, this year, I didn't go into this, but this year is the 50th anniversary of our relationship with the Mazar family and of Hebrew University and the excavations that have taken place at the southern wall of the Temple Mount. Mr. Flory continues, "Dr. Mazar is a scientist, and I've heard her state many times that, quote, we must let the stones speak, end quote. We have tried to follow Dr. Mazar's example in this exhibit. We have tried to let archaeology and documented historical records, both biblical and secular, speak for themselves. For me, one of the most compelling facets of this exhibition is the way we have juxtaposed biblical and secular history. This is not just Bible history, it is Assyrian and Babylonian history too. In this exhibit, we have tried to bring to life some of the most extraordinary and inspiring ancient history you will ever read. This is the story of Assyria's conquest. It's the story of repentance, redemption, and national salvation. It's the story of how God, through a remarkable king-prophet alliance, saved a city and its people from terrorism, war, and conquest. It is the ultimate story of hope." That's what this exhibit is about. That's what these two seals are about. And it is a wonderful honor and a wonderful blessing to be able to showcase them to the world. Again, if you would like to attend this in Oklahoma, go for it. It's at Armstrong Auditorium in Edmond, Oklahoma, just about 45 minutes from the airport northwards. If you are in Jerusalem or Israel and you would like to attend the Jerusalem reception of this event, you can write to letters@watchjerusalem.co.il and express your interest to do so. Or if you're anywhere else in the world and you want to watch the opening ceremony from the comfort of your own house, you can do that by, as we get towards that day, going online to watchjerusalem.co.il, and we'll have a link there to show you that event. It'll be airing at 11 o'clock Central Time in Oklahoma, 7 p.m. here in Israel. So please, I invite you to be a part of this wonderful history as well, and tune in to Watch Jerusalem on June 10th.